Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Welcome back. We're back here with a Gulf Coast Sunday morning on Plain Gardening. Feel free to give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. We've had a lot of subjects we've covered this morning. I've got a lot of pictures coming in. There's some questions about plants. I'll do my best with a lot of these pictures. Dan, I wanted to get to Dan real quickly. Dan, that's Rose of Sharon. It's Althea. You know, I think that the one with the open center that has the kind of red eye in the center is the old variety called Bluebird. The other one is a double variety Rose of Sharon. They're a member of the hibiscus family, Hibiscus rosa sinensis. They kind of look like hibiscus, don't they? We can come back and talk more about those when we come back. I'm not sure why they're just blooming for you. Maybe they got a little bit of sun finally. But listen, we got a caller who had a question who's got to get to church, so I want to get to this caller real quickly. I'm listening. What's up? Linda.
Hello.
How are you, Linda?
I have a question. I have some tiny little light brown spiders that makes a big web, and the spiders are just like a little bit bigger than the head of a pin, and they just got light-colored long legs. And they make this gigantic web, and they're invading not just my roses, but my other green plants, too, my airplane plants and everything. I want to know, I've sprayed some Raid on it, and I keep finding more and more of these little webs and things. What are they, and they're not going to bite me, are they?
You know, probably not. I can't. There's a lot of spiders out there in the world, and those spiders are actually doing you a big favor. They're going to eat the bugs that are going to normally get onto your roses and your spider plants and other things. I think they're fine, and probably they're not. That doesn't sound like the kind of spider that would cause any problems. Actually, you know, there's a bit of a myth about spiders and the damage they do. Even black widows. If you were bit by one, it might make you a little queasy, but it's not going to really cause serious problems. It's going to be very rare that even the most dangerous spiders, black widows might be one of the most dangerous, would actually cause problems.
In the middle of them, and I'd spray them with Raid.
I wouldn't do that if I were you. You're probably going to create other problems for yourself. The Raid will cause more problems than the spider, for sure. You know, I don't think they're a problem, really.
Okay, just dust the webs out of the plants then and leave them alone, huh?
Yeah, you could do that, or you could leave them there if they're not too much of a bother, because they're actually capturing pests.
They seem to be making the little leaves where they're at, they're making them turn brown, I think.
Well, the spiders wouldn't do that. Something else might. The spiders are actually eating insects that would be causing problems for the leaves.
Okay.
Send me some pictures of these spiders. Would you do that? And and just send me some pictures. Can you take a picture and send me a picture? I know you got to get to church, but maybe do it in next week.
I don't think they would show up. But I thank you. Okay, bye.
All right. Are they on the bottoms of the leaves?
No, they're on the top. It's just like you, they're out like a web across the top.
And they're from stretching from leaf to leaf.
And they're extensive. Some of them, between the branches of the roses, they're like maybe a foot long. Real thin, thin webs.
Yeah, and you can definitely see the spiders in there.
You have to hunt, but I've gotten so I try to pinch that before I dust the web off. So I'm trying to be sure.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's harming the plant. It sounds like it's probably benefiting the plant. But, you know, if you could, if I can't get a picture from you, I'll see what I can think and see if I'll think about that and see if there's anything else. So listen out next Sunday. I'll think about that very hard and make
sure
we're
Thank you. you.
We're on the same page. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, so, you know, in general, spiders are not... Every now and then, one I'll get a spider bite. It happens. I don't know which spider it is. It'll be some spider out in the garden, some spider out in the woods. And it'll make a little hole in a depression. But, you know, you barely even notice it. It's usually not a problem. As long as you've got a reasonably healthy immune system, it shouldn't be a problem at all. And black widows, even black widows, the threat from black widows is grossly overstated. They really don't cause a lot of deaths. In fact, it's pretty rare, extremely rare. Maybe almost unheard of for any kind of death to occur from a spider bite. So it's just something to think about. So Jim in Georgetown sent me a picture. Now, let's get back to these pictures real quick, because I got a lot of them this morning. And he found this beautiful plant at the edge of a wooded area and around Georgetown and wants to know what it is. It's an orchid, Jim. It's a type of orchid. It's the group of orchid we call ladies' tresses orchids. Ladies' tresses, because the flowers are formed in a spiral, like the way, kind of reminiscent of the way you make a ponytail, right? With tightly bound, but they form a spiral around the plant. The Latin name for these orchids, this group of orchids, is Spiranthes, Spiranthes, like a spiral, in a spiral-like pattern. And you see how those you see how they kind of twist around the stem, and the stem itself looks like it's twisted, as if it's been braided like hair. Ladies' tresses orchids. Now, which one that one is, I'm going to say it's the spring ladies' tresses orchids, maybe, but I'm going to have to think about it. I need to see the leaves. I need to see a little bit more detail in the flowers. I'm not sure you could take a picture that's tight enough for me to determine exactly which one you're looking at. But it's one of the ladies' tresses orchids. Some of them are pretty rare. Some of them you see, you know, they show up every now and then, but they're awful nice. It's a type of orchid. That's exactly what it is. If you look at those flowers, you'll see that each one of them is a little bitty, tiny orchid. Bob down on Dog River has sent me a picture of a grass. Now, it's Bob didn't want to get down in the water, and he didn't want to pull the grass up out of the water, so it's going to be, I'm having to look at it through the murk of the water, and it could be a lot of different plants. There are many different plants that grow in the water. You know, Bob, I'm going to tell you, no, I can't tell you how to get rid of it. It's one of those things you'd have to do illegal things, and even then it wouldn't be successful. Grasses are pretty much native to Dog River, and they're good productive grasses. I really don't have a great way of getting rid of them. One way to get rid of them is shade, but of course it's going to be hard to shade that area. They look like they're pretty healthy. I can't tell you exactly which ones we're looking at. It looks like there may be several things growing there. It looks like I might see turtle grass, which is great for fishing. Greg, is that not great for fishing? Yes, it is. It's really good for fishing. Looks like you might have some other things in there as well. I just can't guess right now. I'll try to pull that picture up and get a little better picture. Bob, it may help, the best I can do is identify it for you. It may help if I could see those, if I could see those a little more closely. You might have to pull them out of the water, and I could tell you what they are and what they do. But you know, getting rid of them is sort of like saying, "Oh well, I don't like water in Dog River." It's got to be really hard. I don't want any fish in Dog River. Well, you know, yeah, but there, it's what happens in a river, and it's going to be there. I don't think there's an easy way to get rid of them. That's just the way it is. And even if you were able to get rid of them right around your own dock, they would reinvade very quickly from everywhere else, because they're all along Dog River. Well, we're going to take a break here. We'll be back. Give us a call, 251-591-2215. No, that's not it.
Along about 1825, I left Tennessee very much alive. And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-ruttin' that Tennessee stud. I had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw, and one of her brothers was a bad outlaw. I sent her a letter by my Uncle Foot, then I rode away on the Tennessee stud.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Bob down on Dog River sent me a picture of something he wanted to get rid of. It's in the water. It's in Dog River. I was actually able to call it up and zero in on it, magnify it a little bit. And Bob, I can tell you, it's water stargrass, which is really a great grass. It's one of the really top grasses for fish. It's one of the top grasses for pintail and other ducks. It's really sought after by a lot of wildlife. It's really nice to see it there. Honestly, it's just a great thing to have. It can promote really great fishing around your dock. You may not be able to cast right into it sometimes. If you use the right kind of lure, you can. Greg, help us about finding a lure that'll work in weedy vegetation. But it's beautiful habitat for fish. It's yellow stargrass. That's what we're looking at. It's a great little thing. Greg, those goggle eyes, those brim, it is sure nice to see them. Boy, I wish it's a kind of a bass brim relative. I wish I had some brim for supper. What a nice thing. What a nice thing having brim for supper. The Cluck Old Hen song, I'm going to have to look up the name of that player. It was the version that I liked, but I, honest to goodness, I can't remember the name of the person who plays it. I'll look that up, and I will tell you all about it. And then Sean over in WeMo has sent me a picture of the flowers, and boy, he says, you're absolutely right. It is the time of year. And what am I seeing? I'm looking at cosmos. I'm looking at Gallardia. I'm looking at sunflowers. They're all looking just absolutely beautiful right now. Give us a call this morning, 343-0106, 343-0106. Charlie, who's our first caller? Art, I'm listening. What's up? Art, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
So tell me about it.
Well, what I have going on is I have two things going on in my yard. Some of the plants that I have, like my plum trees and my evergreen cedars and stuff like that, they will start turning a brownish red at the top of the plant or the tree, and then they just start regressing down. And the plant eventually dies.
Okay, so it's happening to cedars and to the plum.
Right now, and maybe it's something wrong with my soil, because my sister lived next door to me, and she and I both planted the Indian blood red peach.
Yep.
On her side of the fence, which wasn't but about 5-6 yards from where my tree was, she had softball sized peaches. Mine wouldn't get no bigger than my thumb.
Yeah. So let's talk about it. Are the leaves on your plum? Do they look like it's kind of a speckledy rust, kind of like little?
They have a black spotty look to them.
Yeah, kind of like measles with little red dots all over it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So what you're seeing is something. It's one of the cedar rust. And, you know, whether the cedars, usually when cedars and certain members of the apple, pear, plum family, they're all closely related, when they get together, they exchange a disease that's called cedar rust. And you can have a cedar plum rust, cedar apple rust. There's several varieties.
Green killed it too, yes, sir.
Yes, that's right. So plums can be pretty difficult, but it is more than likely it is they're sharing this disease. The cedar survives it just fine.
Anything we can do about it?
Cut the cedars down from as far away as you possibly can. Now, listen, let me tell you, plums are hard no matter what. They can be very difficult. Find a plum variety. You'll want to find a plum variety that's resistant to cedar apple rust or to cedar rust. And there are some out there that are resistant. I have never seen but some of the plum varieties are very susceptible. So plums are going to be hard no matter what in South Alabama. It's just hard. But I would say with the cedars and the fact that these are susceptible varieties, I'd say you got an uphill battle.
Right, okay. But what about the question on the peach? Now, like I said, my sister's tree, we planted them both at the same time, the Indian blood red peaches. Hers grew the size of a softball, and mine didn't get no bigger than the thumb, and it wasn't but just a couple of yards apart. Is there deficiency or something there?
How old were the trees when they fruited?
When we first planted them? Or when we fruited? I think they were like 5 years old.
5 years old when they finally fruited. Well, if what happens, it could be a soil thing, but, you know, oftentimes trees that produce a lot of fruit, the fruit never sizes up. So a lot of growers, when they're growing peaches and a lot of other things for harvest, they will remove often 75% of the fruit so that the remaining fruit gets large.
Okay.
So if you had a big set of fruit on your tree and she had a moderate set of fruit on her tree, then her tree is going to produce much bigger peaches than yours.
Okay.
So when you get peaches, does reducing the size of the tree help too? No, don't reduce the size of the tree. You want to prune it so that it gets lots of light in the middle.
Okay.
So, but you don't want to reduce the size of the tree. What you want to have, you want to reduce the percentage of plums per leaf. So you want to have a lot of leaf per peach. You want to have a lot of leaves for each peach. And that the way to do it is, here's a simple way. Make sure each peach is about 6 inches apart on the stem. Any peaches that are closer than 6 inches, thin them off. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, so
that you only get peaches about 6 inches apart.
Okay. I just want you to know, so I listen to your show every Sunday morning before I go to church, and I really enjoy your program, and I'm getting a lot of wonderful information on how to beautify my yard from you. And I appreciate your efforts very, very much, sir.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you. That's very nice of you to say so. You keep me posted on those peaches, okay?
I'll do that, sir. I'll let you know what happens. Thank you.
All right. Barry, I'm listening. What's up?
Oh, hello. Hello. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty good.
Oh, well, thank you. That's good. Well, let's see. I wanted to ask you about, there used to be a garden here in Mobile called Clark Gardens. Do you remember it?
I do remember Clark Gardens.
Where was it?
Well, it was down towards Dog River, wasn't it? Between Dog and Fowl River. And it's the remnants of that garden I have been on, and there were cedars, there were, there were camellias there that were remnants of that old garden, and Becky Root, I think the roots have taken over parts of that garden. I'm trying to remember whether it was the root garden or whether it was the another garden, but I think it's the roots who took over Clark Gardens, and they still maintain those.
Are they old fashioned camellias?
Well, in many cases they are. They were varieties that were popular in the when Clark was developed, which was what, the 30s and 40s, Clark kind of developed along with Bellingrath at about the same time. Clark may have actually reached a peak before Bellingrath reached its peak. Bellingrath went on to make azaleas a big deal. Clark maintained its focus on the camellias.
Oh, well, another question. Do you remember there's a road called Gold Mine Road? Wait, is the gold mine still there? I saw it when I was very young, about 50 years ago.
I don't remember a gold mine road, I don't know of any gold mines around Mobile. Doubt there are any. There are in the northern part of the state. Hey, we got to take a break. We're going to be back.
Sugar Magnolia, blossoms blooming. Let's all get to have your tail.
Saw my baby down by the river.
Knew she'd have to come up soon for bed.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right. Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of things to talk about this morning. Dan indeed has blossom end rot. I wanted to finish that conversation. He sent me a picture of it. It's something that's showing up on tomatoes this time of year. Look, I can also tell, Dan, if I'm not mistaken, I see the outlines of a pot just on the edge of that picture. This is a container-grown tomato. Container-grown tomatoes are notorious for getting blossom end rot. And the reason has to do less with the amount of calcium in the soil. That's important. That's what a lot of people blame. It has to do with fluctuating moisture levels. So when the moisture level fluctuates, which it has a tendency to do really badly in a pot, you know, it's really hard to manage the water levels. It'll go from being a little too dry to being way too wet, or just a little too wet to being way too dry. And those fluctuating moisture levels means the plant has a hard time regulating the amount of water that it can move through the stems. What's the remedy? Well, you got to maintain your moisture levels. You got to have a bigger pot. Or, Dan, don't grow big tomatoes in a container. Don't grow the big fat tomatoes. Grow the smaller ones. The smaller ones almost never have a problem with blossom end rot. They can regulate nutrient levels much better. They regulate nutrient levels coming to the fruit much better. You rarely have blossom end rot with those, but you do with some bigger things. We've got a lot of callers. Is this true? Charlie, Valerie, I'm listening. What's up?
Hi, Mr. Finch. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
I have my neighbor has an elderberry tree he was just going to chop down, and I was wondering if it can be dug up and transplanted, or if it will survive that. What kind of soil, or what should I do? Is it worth the time?
Yeah, boy, elderberries are easy. I mean, they are. If you were to dig one up and throw it within a reasonable distance of dug soil, it's going to take off and grow. It doesn't take a lot of effort at all. So it's you probably will have some coming up in your yard, given that they're coming up in his. The fruits get spread around. Some people will ask why you would want that elderberry, because but you know why, apparently, because those fruits are absolutely delicious.
Yeah. My daughter is always hunting for elderberry for nutritional and health reasons, and my grandson and I wanted to give her an elderberry tree as a gift for her birthday.
Yeah. There are a lot of elderberry species out there, and they all have different flavors. But the local ones tend to be very, very good. They tend to be very, very good. So, yeah, but it'll transplant really easily. Even if you only get part of the root, it's going to survive. In fact, you could just about lay the stems down in the ground, and they would probably root. They certainly will do that over winter. They probably will do it this time. You could take some... laying the stems down in the ground flat would probably do it, or you can just dig the plant up, but it'll transplant really easily.
Well, thank you. I wanted to tell you, my grandson, I homeschool him, and we listen to you every Sunday, and with gardening, we learn a lot about math and science, and we just enjoy everything in the garden.
Yeah, it is great, isn't it? And it's a great way to learn about science is in the garden. It's a great way to learn about nature is sort of watching how things work in the garden. It's a nice thing to do. Valerie, good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Hey, Dan, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Mr. Bill. I wanted to tell you, you know, those alfeas, you have identified those for me before. I just forgot, but I think the reason they're actually blooming now is because I just cut down a water oak, about a 30-foot water oak that was over them.
That's what did it. It has everything to do with it. So, they're getting sunlight now. They're going to be blooming really fine, and so they're just beautiful things. Alfeas, it's one of those old-fashioned plants that we tend to forget about. When I was growing up, we called them Rose of Sharon. That's the old name, Rose of Sharon. A lot of people know them by that name, but Althea is another name. I don't know where that name came from, actually. It's actually Hibiscus Rosa sinensis is the Latin name, but Althea and Rose of Sharon, Hibiscus Rosa sinensis, and a lot of varieties, and some of them are very beautiful, aren't they? So you've got two varieties there at least. Yeah, yeah.
Now, about the blossom end rot, I was ready to ask you all kinds of questions about calcium and that type of thing, but the containers are what's doing it, huh?
Yeah, it's just I could tell you it is technically a calcium deficiency that the ends of the fruit are not getting good calcium distribution to the ends of the fruits, and so it gets this rot there, and that's what blossom end rot is, a calcium deficiency. But the calcium deficiency is occurring primarily because...
You've got to have water to transport it, right?
Yeah, you got to have water to transport it. And when there's fluctuating levels, it doesn't get to the ends of the fruit. What's interesting is that if you... Yeah. If you use small fruit...
Because I've been treating these, I think, like any other tomato... watering deeply, probably every other day, maybe every third day. If I were to increase and water them every day, do you think that might would help?
Well, it's hard to regulate moisture in a container.
Okay.
Perfectly.
Let me also ask you this real quick before, I'm sorry.
So why don't you do this? Let me talk just a second. Here's what I would recommend. Increase the size of your container. That's pretty important.
That's exactly what I'm going to
and,
ask.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah. And the second thing is go ahead and supplement with a little extra calcium when you do it. They make products that are designed to spray on the leaves that supposedly make it easier for the plant to absorb calcium. I'd give it a try. I don't know if they'll work, but I'd give them a try. And just look up blossom end rot, and you'll find one of these products. And you can try that. You spray it on the leaves, and it should help. But the bigger pot's going to be the easier thing, I think, to help you control the moisture level. And the other thing, Dan, and it's just really important, is the bigger the fruit, the more difficult it is for the it to bring the calcium to the end of the fruit. I don't know another way to say it, but it seems right. like the bigger fruits have the problems. Smaller tomatoes are much better. The small fruited tomatoes are much better in containers.
Right. Makes sense. Okay. I will say that one thing I've noticed just anecdotally, I've got a Roma and an Early Girl in one of these big, each one of those is in its own big, the cow molasses containers that I've made, and they're having no problems with it. And so that definitely, you know, supports what you're saying, put them in a larger container. And that's what I'm going to try to do and see if that kind of knocks it out.
Yep. Yeah, it'll definitely help. It'll definitely help. And it really is just the plant's inability to manage moisture levels evenly, because it just runs into problems moving water back and forth. Also, be sure to bottom water. And, you know, when you water, Dan, when you're watering a pot, real quickly, because I can tell Charlie's got a bunch of folks lined up. But listen, when you water, water pretty good, then come back about 2 or 3 minutes later, water again, and then come back 2 minutes later and water again. That makes a big difference. And it has to do with the way soil absorbs water. The alternative is to bottom water, and you can do that too. But I have a feeling that even though the top looks like it might be moist, you're not getting water to the bottom. And the only way to do that is to water, let it sit there, let that water seep in, come back a little later, water again, or you let it just drip for an hour on the plant. And that'll do the same thing.
Okay, I will do that, absolutely, Mr. Bill.
All right, good to hear from you, Dan. Tony, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. Excuse me. I bought some beautiful bougainvillea from a very reputable feed and seed, and they were gorgeous and blooming. And I hung them out in direct sunlight, and they bloomed for a bit, and then all the blooms fell off, and then it went to thorns.
Yeah, so we don't have a great climate. We bougainvillea is an interesting problem here. It bougainvillea blooms in response to alternating cycles of drought and rainfall. The fact that it went ahead and went dormant and lost all of its leaves is probably a good sign. I don't know why it happened in your case, but that means when the rains start again, it's probably going to bloom again.
Well, I moved them up under the eaves of my porch thinking maybe it was getting too much sun. If I keep them watered under my porch, will they bloom again, or did I need to put them back out in direct sun?
They'll never get too much sun. Bougainvilleas love sun. So leave them out in full sun. Putting them under the eaves of the porch means they get no water. That's a forced dormancy. And that's probably a good thing, actually, because that means they're going to come out of that dormancy and they'll be ready to bloom.
Okay.
My granddaddy used to, let me tell you a little bit about bougainvilleas. Granddaddy loved bougainvilleas. So what he would do is, to get them to bloom, in winter, he would force them into dormancy. And that means he would just cut them back hard, let all the leaves fall off. He'd put them in the garage where they got no sunlight, didn't water them very much. And then when spring came, he'd take them out, water them and fertilize them, maybe pot them up, and boy, they would bloom like they'd bloom like crazy. But they need that dormant period.
So right
you've
now,
given
what
it to
I
them.
Need to do is just put them back out in the sun and keep them watered.
That's right.
Okay. And so when it's not raining, like if we have like the week we had last week with no rain, I should water them generously?
Well, you know, it's whatever you did to make them go dormant was the right thing. I don't know how you did it, but it may have been that dry period that we had. We had a dry period a while back, and it just forced them into dormancy. It sounds like they probably need to be potted up. When you bring them out, put them in a little bit more soil than they had, or freshen up the soil, and they should do just fine. But you have to... Yeah, they'll do fine. And then when they quit blooming again, let's talk about it, okay?
Okay. All right, we'll do. Thanks, Bill.
All right. Got to take a break. We got a few minutes left. We'll be back.
A poor wayfaring stranger traveling through this world alone. There is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair land to which I go.
The Steal of a Deal savings continue now through May 30th at Mike Ward's Liberty Safes. Get a Colonial 23 White Gloss Flag Edition 25 Long Gun Safe with 60 minutes of fire protection. Pickup price only $14.99. Or a Presidential 50 Black Gloss Finish 39 Long Gun Safe with 2.5 hours of fire protection. Pickup price only $63.99. 18 months no interest on safes over $2,500 and 12 months no interest on safes over $1,000. Visit MWLiberty.com, like us on Facebook, or just look for the giant Liberty Safe at I-65 and Moffett Road.
Traveling east through Mobile, you'll see a tunnel on I-10.
Call the Jack Green Insurance Agency if you want to save some money.
They'll get back in this car now.
I'm tired of getting stuck in this I-10 traffic. It happens every time we go across the bay this time of day, so I'm making the most of it.
What are you doing?
I'm handing out flyers for Jack Green.
Jack did not.
What better time to think about how much money you could be saving on your insurance by calling Jack Green?
Get away from that truck.
Sir?
Stop.
Did you know Jack Green can insure this dump truck?
Hey, lady, get off my windshield.
You could be paying too much.
What are you, crazy?
Hello?
Crazy lady. Jack Green has been saving the good folks of Alabama money for over 30 years on their homeowners, commercial, and business insurance. It just doesn't make good sense to pay too much. Jack Green saves you green. Call for a quote today. 251-344-5393.
Ask for Jack.
This is Chris Francis, board-certified master arborist at Chris Francis Tree Care. Trees are such a valuable part of your property. Want to know how to keep pest problems away from your trees? Start by keeping them healthy, making sure they're growing in a favorable environment, providing the proper nutrients, and maintaining the appropriate pH. Meanwhile, certain pests attack perfectly healthy plants. Timely applications of oils, soaps, insecticides, fungicides, and fertilizers will significantly improve survivability. But the key is having knowledgeable experts making regular site visits to catch or prevent problems before they occur, all while protecting the pollinators and beneficials. Does this sound overwhelming? Let our plant health care professionals do it for you. Call 4TREE, that's F-O-R-T-R-E-E, Chris Francis Tree Care, online, chrisfrancistreecare.com, or find us on Facebook, or call 367-8733, 251-4TREE.
You wouldn't go on a trip without knowing where you're going. Retirement is the same. That's where the Retirement Peace Roadmap Radio Show can help. Join host Don Moore for the latest on retirement, tax, and legacy planning. Sunday afternoon at 2 here on FM Talk 106.5.
You know, a lot of advertisements for sales jobs are sugar-coated with all the money you could potentially make, or they're honey-dipped with opportunity. In reality, you make as much as you put into it. FM Talk 106.5 is looking for good people to be on the street representing us to local businesses while helping them with their local marketing. Experience is preferred, but we'll work with folks with a good attitude. This is Bill Roth, Director of Sales. Drop me an email to jobs@fmtalk1065.com today, and we'll set up an appointment. That's jobs@fmtalk1065.com.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Dan sends me a picture of a little bee on his zinnias. It's a beautiful bee, and he wants to ask me what kind of small bee it is. It's much smaller than a honeybee. Dan, I can with complete confidence assure you that that is a small bee. Beyond that, I'm not sure. You know, one of the things we forget is there are a bunch of native bee species out there, a bunch of them. You gloss-eyed bees, mason bees, what we call sweat bees, which I think includes a whole bunch of different kinds of bees, carpenter bees, bumblebees of all types. Just many, many native bees, and they're very important pollinators. They're doing their work. They're doing it very well there in your garden. I'm not sure what they are. You know, one of the interesting things is we don't even know if we know all the bee species in Alabama. In fact, I'm pretty sure we don't. So there it is. Hey, we've got some callers. We better get to them before we run out of time. Charlie, who's our first caller? I'm listening. What's up?
Hello?
Hello. Can you hear me?
This is Tara. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. What's up?
I've got a saucer, S-A-U-C-E-R, watering question.
Okay.
Having to move things around, things that were previously in shade, going to sun and stuff like that, between construction between neighbors, and I got upcoming construction, and I don't have a lot of time to baby a lot of plants, and I got a lot of plants, and so if you're saying that we're going to have, you know, at least 10 more days before we get into the rainy stuff, water, I can put the saucers under them. I've been putting it off because I was thinking, well, I'll just wait it out, right? Which usually I can, but still having to do a lot of watering, so if I put, you know, the 2-inch saucers under the ones that really, like the tomatoes and the things like that, that are going to really have to have it. Is it bad to do that more? I mean, more than once a week, surely. What's the proper way to go about that? The top watering combined with the bottom watering, or just doing the bottom watering, refilling the saucer 3 or 4 times? What do you suggest?
Well, if, you know, either way, you're going to lose the water, but you definitely want the water to come in from the bottom of the pot. One of the problems is when the soil begins to dry out, it doesn't transfer water to the bottom of the pot because you get these sort of impervious layers where the water doesn't move very well. And so it looks like it's watering, but it's actually not getting down into the bottom of the pot. There is always a part at the bottom of the pot that stays wet. That's the other weird thing. Usually it stays wet at the bottom of the pot, and that has to do with the physics of how soil transfers moisture. But if you know, bottom watering allows you to soak it up through the bottom and up to the top, and that's probably that may be the best way to do it, but you can get just about as good a results if you do the 3 times watering technique that I talk about. I don't know that having a saucer under the plant permanently will make that much difference one way or another, honestly. I think you're just going to have to water during these dry spells. Yep. I'm not hearing a response from Tara. Have we got another caller, Charlie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, how are you doing? I just want to ask your listeners to be very careful. I was out the other day, and I had a pole saw, and I was cutting down branches, and I decided to cut down a dead branch. And unfortunately, I didn't pay enough attention. I didn't even, to be honest with you, look. I'd never seen it before, and I ended up killing 4 little baby woodpeckers. And I feel really bad about it. So this time of the year, everybody be careful, man, about, you know, what we're doing. You don't want to cause harm to any other creatures unnecessarily. And I'd like everybody just to be careful. I want to say I love your show. I think you talk about a lot of interesting topics, and keep up the good work.
All right, thanks. Yeah, that is, you know, that is a big thing. This time of year, there's a lot of nesting going on out there. A lot of birds flying around. We gotta. That's it for this week, folks. But we'll be back next week. Save it up and give us a call.